Okay. So we're still on Daf Vav Amud Beis, hopefully moving on to Daf Zayin Amud Aleph. Fine, if you're counting up from the bottom, it's six lines up. Amar Rav Chelbo, Amar Rav Huna, we've had a whole string of Mamorim, Rav Chelbo in the name of Rav Huna. Kol Adam, Sheyesh Bo Yira Shamayim, Dvarav Nishmoyim. A person has Yira Shamayim, he could have an impact on others. Others will take him seriously. The Meiri says that Chazal say Kshot Atzmacha Tchilo V'Achaka Kshot Acherim. In other words, if you're not a Yira Shamayim and you're going to get up and give Musa about Yira Shamayim, nobody's going to listen to you. But if you represent that Darga, that Yira Shamayim, then you can have an impact on others. And Rav Chelbo derives it from a pasuk. This is the very famous pasuk at the end of Koheles. Sof davar akol nishma, es halukim yira, ves mitzosof shmar, ki ze kol ha'odim. So if you take a look at the syntax of the pasuk, it doesn't say, sof davar akol tishma. In other words, please listen to the end, to the end line, which would mean that the end of everything is Esalokim Yira, that Yiras Hashem, you know, after Koheles basically disqualifies everything, you know, everything is Hevel HaVolim. At the end, Self Tavar called Tishma, which doesn't say in the Pasuk, listen to my bottom word. The bottom line is Yiras Hamayim. No, it says Self Tavar called Nishma, it's heard. So why does Koheles use that the word Nishma in that syntax? It will be heard. It doesn't make sense. It says it should be heard, not it will be heard. So the reason why he says Hakol Nishma, it will be heard, is because he's referring to a Yirei Elokim. As Elokim Yirei, if you fit that pattern and that description and that category, then is Hakol Nishma. Hakol Nishma, that means whatever you say will be heard. What does it mean, whatever you'll say will be heard? A person says something so everyone's going to listen to him, they're going to salute. Doesn't make any sense. And the Mefarshim say that there's a Mishnah that tells us in Masechta Avos that a person should be mevatel his ratzon in front of the ratzon of Hashem. In other words, he accepts the will of God. And the Mishnah goes on to say that what's the blessing for someone who is mevatel his ratzon lifnei ratzon Hashem? Is others will be mevatel their ratzon b'fnei his ratzon. Hashem will see to it that if they have, let's say, bad intentions against him, since he, this tzaddik, this Yirei Elokim, does everything in order to fulfill God's will, so really he represents God's will in this world, then God's going to make sure that this person can achieve his maximum. And anyone who has any bad thoughts about undermining him, those thoughts will be batel umevutal. And then the Bali Musa say on this Gemara that if a person sees that nobody's listening to him, he's giving Musa, no one's paying attention to him, then in all likelihood he should assume that he himself is not a Yira Shamayim. If they're not listening to him, he should check out his own credentials. Although if he's speaking in front of Rishayim, they're not going to listen to anyone, even a Yira Shamayim. But we're talking about someone who's giving Musa in front of others who are interested in fulfilling the will of Hashem. And if they're not listening to him, they don't pay any attention to him, that may be a reflection on himself, that he is not sincere, he's not tocho kibaro, as we said. By the way, the Mishnah in Avos, in case you want to see it, is in the second perek. Batel ritzoncha mipnei ritzono, kidei sheyevatel ritzon acherim bifnei ritzoncha. Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to mevatel the ratzon of acherim for the person who himself is mevatel his ratzon for the ratzon of Hashem. That's called mida keneged mida. Okay, let's see if we can see an insight here in Rav Kook. And this should be on your page 28, all the way on the bottom right. And it's number Samach Dalet. The language here is quite challenging. We'll give it a shot. He says, Bechol Mechkar. He says, whenever there's an investigation, in other words, a group of people get together to take counsel with each other, you know, they form what we call a committee. A committee, that's the in thing, right? You have a committee. and Yesham Hatzaot, and everyone gets up and gives his idea what would be the best project, the best method or program to achieve a certain goal, a certain objective. Ech Sheboim El Hatachlis Amavu Keshes. How can we achieve our objective? Vamavukash Biatzmo. And to really achieve that which is mevukash, that which is desired by all. He says, Iker akol, mashu roi lekabel, hu rak atachlis amvukeshes, v'lo atzaot. The truth is that the ultimate goal here is not all these suggestions and programs. Yeah, everybody has their own advice, everyone gets up. You can imagine at a kibbutz meeting, you know, the kibbutz is run by the committees. You know, every kibbutz has committees. So everybody yells out, this is what we should do, this is what... But all those hatzot, he says, are really only means to an end. That's not the goal. The ultimate goal and the clinchers is not the hatzot, not the suggestions, but to achieve the goal itself. The goal itself is what we should be focusing on. Al-Kainan, therefore, he says, Kol ha-chachmos, when man studies the Torah and the wisdom of the Torah, Hena, what the Torah is going to teach us are just guiding programs, hatzaot, l'tachlit ha-mitit, in order to get at and achieve the ultimate true goal, hamuseget mehem. So all of the Torah, that's, you know, it's famous in the name of the Slonim Rebbe that he says that the 613 mitzvahs are not separate mitzvahs, there's 613 ways of achieving one single mitzvah, which is Yerushalayim. That's why the Gemara at the end of Makkah says that you don't really have 613, you have one mitzvah, and that's Yerushalayim. So the ultimate goal is Yerushalayim. Who cares about all the different atzot? They're secondary. Al-Kainan, therefore, Misha Yesh B'yodo HaMaskana, the person who achieved the paramount goal of Yerushalayim, he's got the bottom line, he achieved the objective. Even if he's not so brilliant to come up with different programs and different suggestions, he's not the guy who stands up at the, you know, at the meeting of the committee and yells out, this is what we should do, and I profess this and that. No, he's a very quiet sort of guy. But nevertheless, whatever he says, people take him very seriously. Because they realize, with all due respect to their many different suggestions and recommendations, it's he who achieved that goal. All of their recommendations and suggestions are meant to achieve one goal. So for example, you can get a Rosh Hashiva, you know, he's a great Talmud Chacham, he understands the Chachmas HaTorah. But then, when he wants to say something about how to achieve the goal of Yerushalayim, I'm not so sure that, you know, everyone's excited about what he says. But if on the other hand you have someone, even if he's a quiet sort of fellow, he's not from the great Chachamim, we haven't seen him write Chidushei Torah, he didn't publish his magnum opus, but nevertheless, Dvarav Nishmaim, because he embodies Yerushalayim, which is the ultimate goal and objective of everything. He says, Shebeteva nefashos, yesh sgula, lios nechnoim, lemisha also biyodo atachlus. He says, it's natural to man to subject himself, or subjugate himself to the person who achieved the ultimate goal. He's not so interested in those brilliant fellows who get up and they make suggestions. He's impressed by the one who really achieved the final goal. You know, he climbed Mount Everest. How he got up to Mount Everest, that's secondary. And that's what the pasuk means when it says sof tovar kol nishma. Sof tovar means the maskana, means the tachlis, it means the ultimate goal. And then someone who reached the final goal, the sof tovar, which means es elokim yirei, he achieved and he personifies Yiras Hashem, is dvar of nishmaim. People listen to him very, very seriously. Now let's just put Rav Kook on the side for a moment. We'll come exactly back in just a moment. The Gemara now continues with the very same pasuk at the end of Koheles. And the Gemara wants to understand the seifa of the pasuk. You know, until now we've been focused on the resha of the pasuk, which is sof tovar kol nishma, that we listen to him. But then the pasuk ends with the famous, these are the last four words in Sefer Koheles on Sukkos. You know, we Shabbos Chol Moed, so we all yell out ki ze kol ha'adam. What does it mean ki ze kol ha'adam? Meaning, if not for the drasha of Rav Huna, I would have said ki ze kol ha'adam means this is the pinnacle and this is the goal of man, es elokim yirei. But now that we've spoken about someone who has reached the level of es elokim yirei, we're talking about a person who personifies Yiras Hashem, and we've heaped so much praise upon him that everyone listens to all his words. So what does it mean? Ki zeh kol ha'adam. The sefer is sort of like hanging in midair. Mai ki zeh kol ha'adam. And the Gemara offers three different answers to explain these last four words, ki zeh kol ha'adam. And the first answer is Rabbi Lazar. HaKadosh Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God declares, Kol HaOlam Kulo Lo Nivra Ela Bishvil Zeh. The entire universe, its creation, is justified by this one individual who reached the level of Yiras Shamayim. And I begin to appreciate that now the Sefer, the end of this pasuk, fits in beautifully with the Reisha. The Reisha is heaping praises, what's going to be if a person achieves the ultimate goal of Yiras Shamayim, and everyone's going to listen to him. And now, the whole universe is justified in all the creation of every single creature because of him. Wonderful. And then we get to Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana. Now we're expecting some sort of a chiddush. Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana Amar, Shakul Zeh Keneged Kol Olam Kula. This individual weighs as heavily as the rest of the world. As if to say, you take the entire world on one side of the scale, you put this Yirei Shamayim on the other, he outweighs the entire world. Reb Shim ben Azai Omer, V'Amri Le Reb Shim ben Zoma Omer, Kol HaOlam Kulo Lo Nivra Ela Litzeves Lazeh. The entire world was created to be his accompaniment, to accompany him. You know, they're like part of his Chabura, his Tzevet. He represents the Rosh HaChabura, and they in a sense serve him. And the question I want to raise with you, which is so obvious, is what's the difference here between Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Shimon? They all seem to be saying the same thing in different words, meaning that if this man who embodies, he personifies Yiras Shamayim is the ultimate goal of creation, then the male, we understand that he outweighs every other creature, and we understand that everyone there is meant to serve him or to help him and facilitate him and his existence because the whole world was created for him. So what are these three versions in the Gemara? And once again, I looked in the Mefarshim and I didn't really find anything that was meaningful, but we'll take a look at Rav Kook. So we're now on page 28. If you need a copy, Avi,
I have a 28.
Oh, you have a 28, great. We also have 29, I think, for today. So we're on number Samach Hey, you see on the left side? Did it come out all right on your page? Yep. It's a little bit cut off. He says the following, that the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, and this we've noticed over and over, that in this book called Ein Ayah, he quotes the Mor Nevuchim left, right, and center, which might be a message to us that we should begin to learn the Mor Nevuchim. I don't know. In the yeshiva world, they don't emphasize the Mor Nevuchim at all. He says the following, Mi'ein bebakoshas tachlis benekuda achas el ha-metzius. The Rambam rejects a certain philosophy or a philosophical point that underlies a lot of what you'll find in the works of Aristotle and before him of Plato. And that is that if there's a tachlis and one particular dimension, one particular, you can pinpoint one area of the universe that achieves that tachlis, then everything else is completely null and void. In other words, nothing is justified, the existence of nothing is justified except for that one thing that represents the ultimate goal, the tachlis. And the Rambam rejects that approach. Avoladaito, but rather the Rambam substitutes and he says, kol nimtza, anything that was created, nivra bavur atzmo, its existence is justified by itself. You don't have to take A and says, well, A is only there in order to serve B, because B represents the tachlis. No. If God gave existence to A, and existence is better than non-existence, right? If all the, you know, if you if you compare, you know, two different attributes, one is head there, which means non-existence or absence, and you compare mitzius, which means existence, then the Rambam says to exist is greater than not to exist. If God bestows, he desires existence on something, then that thing has to have its own purpose, and its existence justifies itself. The Rambam rejects this approach that something exists only to serve something else. And obviously Rav Kook is quoting this Rambam because it's problematic. Our Gemara seems to assume that this Yari Elokim is the epitome, the tachlis of the entire universe, the entire creation. And the Gemara goes on to say that Sof Davar Kol Nishma means that everything is only justified for the sake of this person. Everything is sort of tafel, is secondary, it serves this one individual. And that seems to be antithetical to the Rambam. So when I read this opening introduction, I thought that Rav Kook is going to come out, somehow come and defend the Rambam against our Gemara and reconcile the two. But instead, Rav Kook takes a different approach. And he says, Vehine, af anu nomar, that's sort of like a humble way of saying that I'm not so sure the Rambam is right. We're going to suggest, de pligi bazer avoseinu. That our rabbis had a pluto about this very philosophical point. Can the existence of something be, in a sense, insignificant, but it only is meant to serve something else? And he goes through the three shitos now in our Gemara. The first shita is going to be Rabbi Eliezer. Correct? Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar Sfirle, he holds the Hatzadik, Ha'adam Amusari B'Tachlit HaShleimut. And again, I've mentioned to you many times that the word Musari in Rav Kook, he uses it differently than the way we usually use it. You know, we use Musar as ethics. He uses Musar as the entire constellation of all of man's kochos to serve Hashem. Anything that goes the intellect, the emotions, the striving for spiritual greatness, everything, the whole gamut is called Musar. And the tzaddik represents the person who in the world of Musar has achieved the ultimate perfection and the ultimate objective for which he was created. Vehu tachlis kol ha-metzius. And he is the ultimate goal and objective of everything that was created. Al Kanan, therefore, Rabbi Elazar says the following: Kol ha-olam kulo lo nivra ki im bishvil zeh. Right? That's the language of Rabbi Elazar. Vizeh vizeh, meaning all the rest, ein lahem tachlis. Nothing else has a purpose. Because again, let's read the words of Rabbi Elazar. He says, Kol ha'olam kulo lo nivra ela bishvil zeh. There's nothing to justify the existence, the creation of anything else. That is antithetical to the Rabbah. However, don't lose hope. There's still, you know, there's still a ray of hope a glimmer of hope in the distance for the Rambah. And that's the second mandiyob, which is Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Sfirle Kedas HaRambah. She'ein lomar, we should not say, as Rabbi Elazar would have it, b'metziut zeh tachlis lezeh, that the metzius, the existence of one thing, is only as a prerequisite or as an introduction to the tachlis, to the ultimate goal. Ela erech vada yesh lanu, every single thing has its value. Laharich, sheyesham nimtzoyim yekorim mishayrisam. Sheyrisam means the remainder. You know, the rest of creation, not including this one Yirei Shamayim, this one tzaddik, also have, every creature has a value, as the Rambam would have. This is Rabbi Abba. Al Kain, let's see how to read this into the words of Rabbi Abba. Mefarish, he interprets the words, ki ze kol ha'odam, shakul ze keneged kol ha'olam. What he means to say is that if you weigh everything on the scale, then it's really equal. It's, I guess you'd say, 50-50. Meaning, the rest of the world is not null and void, as perhaps Rabbi Elazar would have it, but after you add all the other creatures together, they only weigh as much as this one person who's Yirei Shamayim. And that's the second Mandiyomer. And then we get to Rabbi Shimon ben Zoma, or he has it as Rav Shim ben Azai, right? There are two nuschos. Rav Shim ben Azai svirulei dea mimutzas. He decides to take the middle ground, the middle road. On the one hand, lo yi talking lomer tachlis b'nekuda shel klal ha-metzius. He agrees to he approves of the Rambam's approach that you cannot possibly just say that the metzius is not justified. It's only the tachlis is justified. Aval hu rak shelo lomer shagak v'shvil zeh tachlis nivro ki im yesh l'chol nimtza gam ke mitzaratzo tachlis. He agrees to the Rambam that everything that was created has a purpose that justifies its existence. Aval mikol makom yesh tachlis gvoa, but there's an ultimate purpose she'elea nismachu kol atachlios haktanos mimeno. In other words, everything else is justified in its existence, but only insofar as they connect to the ultimate paramount tachlis. V'zeo, and that's the words of Rav Shimon ben Azai, Rav Shimon ben Azai. Zeo kol olam kulo nivrakim litzavis lazeh. What does it mean, litzavis lazeh? Pirish hakishur haharmoni. In other words, he's talking about what we call the organism, or the harmony of the universe, mipas hakibutz, because everything integrates into one communal whole, sheyesh la nivroim, and every single individual creature is part of this harmony, which is the universe, al zeyesh nekuda tachlit is nela, but in the middle of the universe, the hub of the wheel, is the ultimate goal, which is personified by the tzaddik, the Yiri Shamayim, even though the existence of every single individual plat, every individual is tova, it's inherently good, but it has to be connected to the overall picture of what the universe is about. So basically, just to summarize, Rav Kook is shedding a whole new light on this kol, you know, ki ze kol ha'adam, in the three opinions quoted in the Gemara. And basically, you have two extreme, polar extreme opinions with a middle ground compromise shita. On one extreme polar, we have Rabbi Lozu, who says, "Nein, the Rambam is absolutely wrong, and nothing in the universe is justified. It's all kiman de lesser dummy. It's null and void. It's kemisheino. It's only the one person who achieves, using his bechira chavshus, he achieves the goal. He's worth something. His existence is justified." On the other end of the spectrum, we have Rabbi Abba, who actually advocates for the Rambam. Again, he was way before the Rambam, but that sheet of the Rambam, that everything that exists has a purpose that justifies itself. But if you take everything and put it together and weigh it on one side of the scale, and on the other side of the scale, all you have is the tzaddik weighs as much as everything else in the universe. And down the middle, we have Rav Shimon ben Azai, who says that Eino Chinami, the Rambam is correct. Everything in the universe has its purpose, but that purpose might be litzeves. Litzeves means to ultimately connect to the tachlis, to the tzaddik, by helping out the tzaddik and facilitating the lifestyle of the tzaddik. Omer Rav Chelba, Omer Rav Huna. We're back to the Gemara. Kol sheyodea b'chaveru shu ragil liten lo shalom. I have a friend, and he always says shalom to me. You know, he comes over and he wishes me shalom. So what should I do? The proper behavior is yakdim lo shalom. Don't wait for him to say shalom aleichem to you. You should take the initiative, because you know that he wants to give you shalom. And if you take the initiative, he'll certainly be excited and he'll respond appropriately by saying shalom aleichem. Shenemar bakesh shalom v'radfehu. Meaning, bakesh means take the initiative. V'im nosan lo. And if your friend gives you shalom, velo hichzer, and you didn't respond, is nikra gazlan, you're stealing that bakosha shalom, right? Chazal always say, alte birkas hejo kalabeinecha. Anybody's shalom is meaningful for you. Shenemar, because it says, and here we have to spend a little time to figure out what Rabbi Chelbo sees in this pasuk. So pasuk in Tanakh, Vatem bi'artem akerem gzeilas ha'oni bibateichem. You know, the language of especially Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu is very complicated. And they are telling us here, the Nevi'im, that you have destroyed, you have burnt up this vineyard. Why? Because you stole from an oni. Now, what does that have to do with the fact that so-and-so didn't respond to the initiative of Shalom? So we'll look at Rashi. It's the last Rashi on the Vav Amid Beis. Rashi says, "Halo af gzeilas ha'asher gzeilahi." The Gemara is bothered. What difference does it make if you're castigating the people because of gzeila? There's no heter. There's no justification for stealing from the rich. So why does the pasuk emphasize stealing from the poor? Hello, gzeilas ha'ani. You stole from the poor. What do you mean you stole from the poor? He doesn't have anything to sell. He doesn't have a stitch. Ain't lo klum l'gzol mimenu. Hello, by process of default, we have nothing to say. Shalom heshiv, shalom lo hashiv al shlomo. You know, the only thing you could give him that's really coming to him, and he has rights to possess, is shalom, because he took the initiative and said shalom to you. You're meant to respond shalom to him. The Marsha adds a whole other kneshia to this Gemara, as opposed to Rashi. And he says the word ani here is not a reference to a poor person, but rather it's a reference to what's called ania. Ania is a response. Right? Like we have many parts of tefillah which require ania. Here too, when a person gives you shalom, you're required to respond with a shalom. And if you don't respond, then gzeilas ha'ani, if you don't respond with an aniyah, you've stolen from the ani. Who deserves the aniyah? He deserves your birkas shalom. So this Gemara could be understood on a very simple level. And it means that you have a person that you anticipate will take the initiative and give you shalom. That's how he's done in the past. He has a very good record. You should jump forward and take the initiative and yaktiv lo shalom, because yavakesh, bikesh, bakesh shalom v'rodfei. But here the Marsha throws a bomb question. The Gemara in Gittin describes Rav Chisda as a person, shaya makdim shalom, he would initiate shalom, afilu l'gayim. Now, the Marsha assumes that if the Gemara is heaping praise on Rav Chisda because he was makdim shalom and afilu l'goyim, it means that he always took the initiative. If you read Rav Chelbo and our Gemara carefully, is Rav Chelbo has a precondition here. He doesn't say an absolute in every situation, yakdim shalom. He says, yodea b'chavero shurog yalitein lo shalom. You know that your friend, that he says shalom to you, then you should be makdim. But why not follow the paradigm, the footsteps of Rav Chisda, and always be makdim shalom, even for a guy? And the kash is a very strong kash. He offers three answers, and frankly, I'm not excited about any of them. The first answer he says is that maybe when the Gemara was heaping praise on Rav Chisda, shari makdim shalom, he was makdim shalom to people who were makdim shalom to him. It's a little bit of a kvetch there. It's to say that that's the ukimta. They're talking about that circumscribed case, and we give such praise to Rav Chisda. I mean, it almost seems natural that he would be makdim shalom to someone who's going to be makdim shalom to him. And the second two answers of the Marsha is that the whole discussion about Rav Chisda is only about goyim. What's the relationship to a goy? Right, that's going to be the kasha on the Marsha. But let's just hear the Marsha, and then we'll ask the kasha. He says the following. In the second answer, he says that what the Gemara wants to praise about Rav Chisda is that he was so interested in good relations between the non-Jews and the Jews, which is called Darkei Shalom in the Lashon of Chazal, that he took the initiative for in the case of a goy. Meaning, says the Marsha, in the case of a non-Jew, he wouldn't have taken the initiative unless he was, you know, somebody had a chazakah that he always came to him for shalom and initiated shalom. But for a guy, it didn't matter to Rav Chisda one iota whether this guy would respond with the proper response or he didn't. He wanted to achieve a Darkei Shalom situation. And even if the guy would not respond to him, he would still initiate Shalom. And I have to tell you, Rabosai, there's a famous story about the Shoah, which I heard from my father-in-law. And my father-in-law went through the Shoah. I mean, he was sent to Siberia. But I consider him almost like a Kli Rishon. I'm sure you've all heard the story. Back in Austria, there was a Hasidish Rebbe who used to go for a walk every morning in the Tayelet in Austria that was next to the water. What body of water is borders on Austria? I forgot exactly. Oh, the Black Sea, whatever it is. And every morning, there was an Austrian guy who used to pass by going the opposite direction, morning after morning. And every morning, the Chassidish Rebbe would turn to this guy and he said, "Good morning, Herr," whatever his name is. And this went on literally for years until the Nazis came to power. And this Chassidish Rebbe, along with all the people in the town, were taken to one of the camps. And at that point, there was a Nazi officer who was sending people, you know, what they call selectia, you know, whether you go to the right or you go to the left. To the right meant you still had a chance to live, and to the left meant you went straight to the gas chambers. And as this Nazi is sending people to their death, the Chassidish Rebbe, of course, didn't look anything like, you know, he did back in the Alta Heim, says to him, "Good morning, Herr," whatever his name is. And he sent him to life. So this Avi Maktim Shalom Chalodim Afilu Lagoy, Afilu Liyaku.
Is that the same guy?
It's the same guy. In other words, the guy, when he heard the good morning, you know, he recognized the voice of the Chassidish Rebbe, who never failed to wish him a good morning. And that's what saved his life. And my shver is Solzhen Gesund. He's Kedai 91 already. You know, so he always tells this story because he wants to impress us how important it is. And he, in his own life, you know, he runs around to an extreme saying good morning to everybody. You know, and in New York City where he lives, that's a little bit unusual. He gets all sorts of strange stares, and then he turns to me and he says, "Azaria, don't pay any attention to them. You know, you got to say good morning, no matter what they look." In America, you should know, you say good Shabbos to someone, they look at you, it's strange. Alright, I don't want to be motziwa. And finally, the Marsha gives a third answer, and he says that with regard to Goyim, he says, Haderechi Shemeshiv al Birka Shlomo Shachavero Kofelo Bracha. He says the following. The law is, or at least the custom is, that if I say shalom to you, you say a double shalom in return to express your gratitude. Shalom, shalom. Have you ever seen it? Here in Israel, it's quite common. He says, but Rav Chisda wants to avoid that situation with regard to a guy. He wants to give him a double shalom. I mean, there are deeper meanings to this. It's not for us now, but... So what did he do in order to circumvent, not put himself in a situation where he have to say a double shalom to a guy? He took the initiative. Very clear. Let's see Rav Kook. Rav Kook doesn't like the whole story. He says the following. This is on page 29. If you don't have it, it's over here. The Marsha raised the question from the Gemara Gittin that Rav Chisda was makdim shalom lenachrim mashma lafilu lemisha eno rogel lahakdim lo shalom v'tirets demayri. This is the first answer. Birogil haktim lo. Maybe this guy was makdim shalom. O nachri mishum darkei shalom. Or maybe towards a guy he would do this because of maintaining good relations with the goyim. And then we saw the third answer of the Marsha, which he doesn't quote here. He says, "Ubeis hatirutzim enam nirim." I'm not too excited about either of his answers. I'm not sure if he would have said that about the third answer. It's unclear to me. He says, "Dilakaman beperik beis." If you look forward in the second parak of Kiddushin, the Gemara says, "Mefurash umaktim shalom lechol adam vafilu lenachri b'shuk." And when it says lechol adam, it implies that even if he's a person who may not be ragil, meaning we don't know that he always takes the initiative to give you shalom, nevertheless you should take the initiative and give shalom. And then it says, afilu nakri b'shuk, meaning, and even if he's a guy, you should be makdim him shalom. So it seems like an absolute rule that you should always, always take the initiative and give someone shalom, and even a guy. That doesn't seem to square with any of the explanations of the Marsha, because the Marsha is assuming that as a general rule, you're not makdim shalom, he only did it for the sake of a guy, mishum daki shalom. Or if that guy was a guy who was makdim shalom. But other than that, as a general rule, we're not advocating to be makdim shalom here in the Gemara in Brachas Davav Amid Beis. But yet in the Gemara later on in the second parak, the Gemara is advocating that you should always take the initiative. So we're still left with an irreconcilable contradiction. Says Rav Kook, Ulanias Daiti, Dimpogea Bechavero, a man meets his friend, he encounters him, is Midas Chachamim hi lahakdim l'chol adam. That really a Chacham, which represents the Isha Musar, he should always take the initiative. But that's because he encountered someone. It doesn't mean that he has to run around from place to place, from person, knock on his door, tap him on the back, and give him a shalom. Aval ein chovel ishtadil sheyimtzalo kidei lahakdim shalom. You don't have to take the initiative and energetically run around looking for opportunities to say shalom to a person. And this could be nogea in Kiddush HaChodesh, you know, on Motzi Shabbos. You know, do you wait till someone says shalom aleichem, or you go around running around looking for someone to say shalom aleichem? He says that a chacham will take the initiative. But that's only because he's pogea b'chavero. He encounters his friend. But to go ahead and search for his friend in order to give him shalom, that we don't find. Avol biyodea l'chavero. Our Gemara is talking about taking the initiative. You remember the pasuk says, bake shalom v'adfeihu. What kind of case is that? That's only biyodea chavero sh'rog eliten. Now you're talking about a person who wants to get the brach of shalom. He comes to you, he initiates the shalom. How much peace and harmony can you create if you take the initiative? Run around looking for him to have the opportunity. So as a general rule, yes, you should be makdim shalom l'chol adam, but that's only if you're pogea adam, if you meet him in the shuk. But someone that you don't encounter, should you go ahead and look for the opportunity to say it? Well, you know, you're always involved in a sort of iffy situation, because if he doesn't respond, you made him into a gazlan. You know, it's like a little bit of lifnei ivril osite michshol here. Maybe it's not always such a good idea to say shalom to someone if you're afraid he might not respond with shalom. That makes him into a gazlan. But if you encounter a person, you know, you're looking him straight in the eyes, then you say shalom to him. And that's a universal rule of chachamim. But don't run around looking for people, because then you get into trouble. You might be over lifnei iver. But if you know about that person, there he is, his back is turned to me, but he's a person who always likes to say shalom, and now I have the opportunity of taking the initiative and giving him a shalom, and really upgrading our friendship, that's something that we should do. And now, Rabosu, we get to the most, I don't know if it's the most difficult Gemara. I mean, we had a Gemara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu wearing tefillin. You know, that was challenging enough. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a mispalel. God prays. Now, what does that mean, God prays? I don't even ask him. He's got pages and pages on this in the Masechta. What does it mean, God prays? But let's at least go through the sugya itself. Om Rab Yochanan Mishum Rab Yossi. Minai. Rabosai, the first word in this Gemara is itself a pele. Because the Derech HaShas is to ask Minayim on some previous statement. You know, you have an introduction and you've made a positive declaration, and now I say Minayim. How do you know such a thing? Out of the clear blue, the Gemara asks Minayim. Something fluky going on here. Minayin shakadosh baruch hu mispalel. I mean, that was a dover pashut. You knew that God prays, right? Everybody knows that God prays, right? But what's the basis for it? Shenemar vaviosim el har kodshi v'simachtim v'es tefilasi. You remember this pasuk either from Yom Noraim, we repeat it over and over, or on a Tainis, we say it over and over again in the famous Haftorah for a Tainis Tzibur. Tfilosam lo nemar. Yeah, we're talking about the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash is designated as a place for prayer. But who prays in the Beis HaMikdash? Man prays in the Beis HaMikdash. That means it should be called Beis Tfilosan. Tfilosan in Lashon Rabbah, because we're talking about the masses of people coming to pray in the Beis HaMikdash. But it doesn't say Tfilosam, but rather it says Tfilosi. It's my prayer. It's a house for me to pray in. Mikan Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mispalel. So before we get into the philosophical question, what it means that God prays, and the Gemara is going to spend some time asking what exactly is the prayer that God recites, what's the formula? First, I want to relate to the original question we asked about the word Minai. And the Gaonim point to a Rabbeinu Chananel. Rabbeinu Chananel, who is from the later period of the Gaonim, says the following. That this Gemara Minayin is to be attached to a different Gemara in Masechta Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, just a minute, before we get into this, there was something I wanted to say before, and of course it slipped out of my mind. One second. Oh, okay. Hopefully it'll pop into my mind again. In any event, what does the Gemara tell us in Rosh Hashanah? The Pasuk says, Vayavar Hashem al panav vayikra. This is in Parashas Kisisa. We'll get to it in a few weeks. Following the Egel. And Rabbi Yochanan says there, the same Rabbi Yochanan who's here, Ilmale mikra kasav yefshel yomro. This is something that a human being can't even enunciate. Melamed shenisatev HaKadosh Baruch Hu shliach tzibur v'herol l'moshe say the tefillah. The Yud Gimel Midas HaRachamim, which is the essence of Aslichos, is something that was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu back in the day after the Egel by HaKadosh Baruch himself. The Omar Lo, and Hashem reveals to Moshe, Kolzman Yisrael Chotim Yasu Lefi Seder Azeh. It sounds like Moshe Rabbeinu is being commanded to do a replica, a duplicate of Hashem's tefillah. And God is praying, and now man is going to follow suit, imitate Hashem, pray in the same way, Vani Mocha Lehem, and through these Amiras Haslichos, we're going to achieve Mechila. Says Rabbeinu Chananel, that's what Rabbi Yochanan is asking over here. Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Hu Mispalel. God, says the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, is Nis'atev Kishliach Tzibur. It means HaKadosh Baruch Hu is davening as a Shliach Tzibur davens with a talis, Iber and cup. What is the basis? Is there some sort of an illusion somewhere in the Tanakh that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really a davener? And the answer is, based philosophy, it's my house of prayer, I daven there. And the Rashba doesn't like it. And the Marsha doesn't like it. Because now, what we're saying is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a mispalel. That's not what the Gemara is talking about in Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah about the Yud Gimel Midas HaRachem and Slicha is not talking about God praying, but rather God teaching Moshe how to pray. So it doesn't make sense that this Minayin is to be attached to that Gemara in Rosh Hashanah.
If God is teaching him how to pray, then why does it say at the end,
Kidvarecha? Kidvarecha, because you took the secret weapon that I taught you and you used it. Your dibur of the Yud Gimel Midos, the Rachman, that's what the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not Chozer al Bris al Rekam, that if these words come in front of Hashem, there's a bris that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commits himself, Kaviyachol, that he will never send these words back, Rekam, without a response. Yisalachti kidvarecha. You've achieved your good. Good, so now we want to look for another alternative pshat here in this Gemara, because we want to satisfy those who are not happy with Rabbeinu Chananel's pshat. Because Minayin Shakadosh Baruch Mispalil is not just that God taught Moshe how to be Mispalil, but Hakadosh Baruch himself is a Mispalil. And the Marsha gives his explanation, and the Rashba gives his explanation, the Marsha gives his explanation. And basically, it comes down to the following. Chazal tell us that we have a Beis HaMikdash down on earth, and there's a corresponding, shall we say, a mirror image up in Shamayim of a Beis HaMikdash al Malach. And Chazal say that the Malach that represents Klal Yisrael, he's the advocate, the attorney, the defense attorney for Klal Yisrael, is Michal. Michal comes into the Beis HaMikdash Shel Malach and he brings karbonos on behalf of Klal Yisrael. Again, these are all mystical concepts, but what we have to understand is that at the end of this very pasuk, Vavi Osem Al HaKodshi, the pasuk says, V'simachtim, and you will bring joy and gladness to me, the Beis Tfilasi, in my Beis HaMikdash. That's the reference to the Beis HaMikdash Shel Malach. And how do we achieve V'simachtim? By bringing karbonos in the Beis Din, in the Beis HaMikdash Shel Malach. How could we climb up to the heavens and bring karbonos in the Beis HaMikdash Shel Malach? We have a good delegate, a representative, and that's the Malach Michael. Nu, it comes out that V'simachtim V'veis Tfilasi is really not a tefillah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. On the contrary, man or the Jewish nation is being represented by a Malach Hashem, and in that process we are bringing Simcha, Kaviyachol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where's the tefillah of Beis Tfilasi? So in order to appreciate that, we have to read the actual tefillah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Fekta Gemara, my matzli, what is the substance of God's tefillah? Omar Rav Zutra, Bar Tuvia, Omar Rav, Yehi Ratzon Milfanai, may it be a will in front of me, Sheyichbishu Rachmai Eskasi. Okay, this is a difficult piece over here. What is Yichbishu? Yichbishu literally means to conquer. But the Ramban says in this context, it doesn't mean to conquer, but what it means is lechasot, to cover. And he brings Psukim in Tanakh to prove that the word yichbishu means lechasos. And what the substance of this prayer and its goal is that there should be in Hashem's midos of din and rachamim a process by which the rachamim will cover over the din and conceal it, and that will prevent the anger of Hashem when Klal Yisrael go off the path from reaching its fruition through Midas HaDin. So Hashem here in his prayer is basically drumming up or giving an extra force or power energy to the Midas HaRachamim to block the Midas HaDin and prevent the punishment of Klal Yisrael. Meaning that up in Shamayim, when Klal Yisrael never do things that they shouldn't be doing, it really engenders divine anger. And if you look at the next piece in the Gemara says, V'yagolu rachmai al midosai. Now, interesting, the word midosai, which l'chora should be a reference here to Midas HaDin, because we're praying for rachamim to overcome, to trump Midas HaDin. Why does it say midosai? Apparently, there's a concept called midah keneged midah, which is two midos. That if we, chas v'shalom, down in this earth, implement a midah ra'ah, so up in Shamayim, midah keneged midah, God activates a midah ra'ah, and we need rachamim to, in a sense, subjugate these midos of midah keneged midah. Now the Bali Kabbalah claim that there are two types of Midas HaDin, and therefore the word Midosai in plural is an allusion to these two categories of Midas HaDin. There's Midas HaDin HaKosha and there's Midas HaDin HaRafa. One is more profound and harsh and the other is more laid back and soft. But whatever it is, it's clear that the entire thrust of God's desire here, so to speak, if you can call it that, Kaviyachol, and the essence and substance of his prayer is that the Midas HaDin should be staved off and that God should not mete out the punishment that we deserve because we've incurred the divine anger. And the essence of this tefillah is the word vigolu. Vigolu rachmai al midosai. A very strange word. You may see it in the slichos for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Aser Yisrael Tshuva. There it says, instead of vigolu, it says vizgalgalu. Yizgalgalu means to convert, to transform something. Lehepach. And he says, "Vigolu rachmai al midosai," a process by which the midas hadin is converted into midas harachamim, and the apex of this is on Yom Kippurim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the midas hadin and he converts it into midas harachamim, and as a result, esnayegim bonai b'midas rachamim ve'ekones lahem lifnim mishur sadin. There are four parts to this prayer. Let's see if we can isolate them. Number one, sheyichbishu rachmai es kasai. Number two, yigolu or yizgolgalu rachmai al midosai. Number three, esnayegim bonai b'midas rachamim. And number four, ekones lahem lifnim mishur sadin.
It's still there.
Right. So the next level of the tefillah, which is Yizgolu Rachamai Al Midosai, that's more than Yichbishu. You know, we're asking for something even greater, for actual transformation of one Midah, which is cast into the Midah of Rachamim. That's the highest level. That might be a remez to Yom Kippur. But Rabosa, I wanted to ask you, what's the significance of the number four? So, Dov, do we have photocopies of this Ben Yoyada? How many? You have just one for yourself?
Yeah.
All right. No, you don't have to. Don't waste your time. It's just a few lines. You were here for Sadis. I wanted you to keep you occupied. You know. He says the following. Do you see? I underlined it on the left column. V'hadinaka b'tfila dalid dvarim. Why four elements in this tefillah? Nirali b'siyata d'shmaya shehem kineged dalid chiluke kapara t'darish masya ben cherish. At the end of Masechta Yuma, kapara fits into four categories. The first category is what's called bitul essay. If a person did not fulfill an essay, then we go to a chiyuv lav, which is a chiyuv malchus. Then we go to the third level, which is Chiyuv Kareis or Mises Bezdin. And the fourth, the most harsh level, is Chil Hashem. Says the Ben Yoyada, the Ben Ishchai, that there are four tefillos, and the ultimate tefillah, which is Midas, Shalom Lefi Midas Hadin, right, what's it called? Lefnim Mishur Hadin, that's necessary for the most intense level of an Avera, which is called Chil Hashem. He says, on a lower level, Hashem has a prayer for those who violate essays, losa says, chiv krisus amisus bezdin, that's igolu rachamim. But finally, when he gets to the spitz, the only hope for someone who's mechal Hashem is ekones lifnim mishuras hadin.
So what, there's no way of repenting for that?
For chil Hashem?
Yes, right. That's going to help.
I think the Gemara says that even death is not a mechaper for Chil Hashem. You need tshuva, you need yisurim, you need misa, you need the whole gamut. All the other mechaperim, each and every one of them, which isolated operates for a different level of sin, and in and of itself is meaningful, will not be meaningful unless you have the combination of all of them in the case of Chil Hashem. And what the Ben Yishchai is trying to call our attention to is that in the context of the tefillah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring about kapara and to lower down the sins and the kaas of Midas Hadin, the highest level and the most difficult level, in a sense, to achieve is what's called Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. In fact, you know, this is Parshas Mishpatim. There's a whole discussion about what's called Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. You know, the judges have to judge according to strict law. But there is a concept called Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. And most of the poskim, I'm not saying all of them, agree that Lifnim Mishuras Hadin is something that only a chassid, Bidarkei HaChassidus, could live up to. No, Beis Din can't enforce Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. Like, for example, let's say you find a lost wallet in a city that's mostly non-Jews. So the assumption is that the person who lost the wallet is either a guy, that's what Rove says, and there's no mitzvah shava, or he's a Jew, but he was misyayish, he gave up hope. Lo and behold, a Jew shows up, and he says, "You found my wallet, and I'll prove it to you." And he has a siman ledofer. According to strict letter law, you don't have to give it back. You're allowed to pocket it. But lifnim mishuras hadin, you give it back. Because you know it's his. Even though he's Messiah, and you are Kone Aveda B'Yeyush, again, it's not for us now, we're not learning Yelam, it's his. It's a profound sugya. But with Nimish Zadin. So most of the posts can say that's your prerogative. You can decide whether you want to give it back or you don't want to give it back. Beis Din will encourage you, recommend you with strong words. Give it back to him, it's his wallet. He may be a poor person. What do you need it for? I mean, you're only gaining something, that you're not losing something. And here HaKadosh Baruch Hu, up in Shamayim, also has something called Lifnim Mishuras Hadin, which means he's going against his very din. And that's the ultimate of this tefillah, on the highest level, which is necessary in its magbil, as we say, it's parallel to Chil Hashem. But then he offers a second approach, and I'm very fascinated by his second approach. Inami, the second approach is, what's the number four here? He says that there are arba misos bezdin, and al pi Kabbalah, these four misos bezdin correspond to the four letters of the word adnus. And he says yichbeshu. When it says Yichbashu is lahasir hapuranius mihem, to remove all these terrible punishments, ushlosha, and he adds another three, chalukos shall yigolu vesnoig veikones lashpiolehem tova. Wow, unbelievable. He's saying that the Rachmanis, the compassion of Hashem, is so great that only one quarter, one fourth of his tefillah is to remove the midas hapuranios, and the other three are meant to bring about Ashpa L'tova. Asher Osher Shal Olam Azeh Shehu Bnei Chaya Mezoneh. Because the greatest Tova you can give falls into three, encompasses three different aspects of human life. Bnei Chaya U'Mezoneh. So according to the second shot of the Ben Ish Chai, it's not that we're climbing up to the most, you know, the dire need of saving a person who's Mechalas Hashem, and that's called Lifnim Mishuras Hadin. But rather, what Hashem is doing is he's actually bestowing goodness on Klal Yisrael. But ultimately, Rav Osai, the underlying thesis here of this sugya is that God has a tremendous love for the Jewish people, and his desire, his tefillah, if you will, is geared at bringing about a situation where instead of kaas, he can respond out of a sense of ahava. There's a lot more to say on this sugya. I'm going to stop now. And we want to learn something for the second part of the day. But remind me, Rabosai, there's a piece here in the Rav Kook. There's a beautiful piece here about what does it mean, according to Rabbeinu Hananel, according to the Rashba, according to Marshall that we mentioned earlier, what is the nature of this tefillah. Okay then? So Bli Neder, we'll pick that up on Yom Shlishi. Okay then? If I don't see you, wish you all a great Shabbos. So we'll be back in 5 minutes, and... Okay.